find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors, not just across town, but across the country? How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Welcome back to Global Reach, everyone. This is a show that helps your business deal with the opportunities, risks, and strategies in the global marketplace. This week, we're looking one more time at energy and sustainability. It's a question of cleaner coal. Can that myth become a reality? I'm here today with two very special guests who are expert in the field of energy and coal in particular. Let me introduce my guests. Robin Eaves, who is the Director, President, and CEO of Clean Coal Technologies. Welcome, Robin.
Thank you.
And Ignacio Ponce de Leon, who is the Director and Chief Operating Officer of the company. Ignacio, welcome to Global Reach.
Thank you very much, Tay.
Before we plunge into the topic, let me give you a little bit of information about our guests. Robin brings over 30 years of global experience to all aspects of the energy market. He's held senior management positions in London, Geneva, and the U.S., and he's conducted business in the U.S., Europe, Russia, the Middle East, Africa, South America, and most recently in Asia, and we'll be focusing a lot on Asia today. Robin has extensive experience in India, which was his birth country, and has very strong industry and political contacts worldwide, something you really need if you're going to be in global energy. During his career, he specialized in joining small teams of professionals and successfully built them into global companies or divisions with larger organizations. He's got strong banking contacts in the U.S. and Europe and strong investor contacts. He's held senior positions with companies such as Cargill and UBS, where he was managing director. Ignacio also brings over 30 years of professional experience to clean coal technology and to our audience. He's had over 25 years in Wall Street, beginning in the National Planning Department for the Office of the Presidency of the Republic of Colombia. He's worked for Carbacol and Exxon Joint Venture to develop, and I'm going to mess up the pronunciation here, but it's either Cierrejón or Cierrejón Zona Norte, one of the largest coal mines in the world. He worked with the team that oversaw the preparation of the National Energy Study, one of Latin America's most ambitious econometric descriptions of a national economy. In 1955, he joined J.P. Morgan, where he formed what became Wall Street's leading fixed income research team, covering corporations globally in emerging markets. Ignacio graduated from LSE and from the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. Welcome, both of you, again.
Thank you very much, Dave. Glad to be here.
So in addition to coal, by the way, we're going to talk about how a small startup company conquers the global energy market. So let's start out with coal. Most everyone I know wishes coal were gone. It's highly polluting. It's more polluting than gas. It's more polluting than petroleum. It releases all kinds of toxic emissions into the air, sulfur dioxide, nitrous oxides, particulate matter, mercury. but it's also got 41% of the electricity market in terms of coal fire plants. So give us a little bit more. What is the role of coal in today's global energy mix? Why can't we get rid of it?
Okay, let me start out, Tay, if you don't mind. I just wanted to introduce my comments by giving a big picture that I think is one that the American public has not really shared too much. If one limits one's knowledge to what one reads in the newspapers, you would come to believe exactly what you just stated, that coal is going away as the dominant source of energy. We all know about the pollution. We all know about, the carbon emissions. We know about the mining industry and the problems it's created. So it's definitely a fuel source that's not popular. Now, more recently, of course, we've seen a sharp decline in natural gas prices, so that it's driven a fair amount of switching from coal to cleaner burning natural gas. And it's quite visible in this country that the general public, and certainly the investing public, has turned its focus toward natural gas and renewable energy sources. So what's the more accurate picture? Okay, this is where I want to start. Coal consumption globally is a whole different picture. In fact, just to start out, I mean, in the U.S. itself, coal consumption has actually held a relatively steady consumption. Between in the last decade, 2000 to 2013, the actual amount of coal that's been consumed has actually remained relatively stagnant. In fact, it's gone up just a small smidgen. It started at about 1.074 billion in the year 2000. It's up to just about 1.1 today. Now, in the global market, it's a whole different picture. The consumption of coal has grown absolutely just astronomically in the last 10 years. In the year 2000, again, a decade ago, it was about 5.3 billion tons were being consumed globally. Today, it's over 8 billion tons. In other words, an increase of about 3 billion tons per annum, or a 54% increase over that period.
That's huge, Ignacio, and I know one of the things that struck me and one of the reasons that I really wanted to interview the two of you is China is putting on one coal-fired plant per week online. So just China is a huge increase, and I know the other Asian countries are also into coal.
That is correct, and I think what you just to give it, to put the actual stats on it, of the 3 billion ton increase that we've seen over the past 10 years in coal consumption globally, India and China together account for over 90% of it. So basically 2.7 billion tons is coming on from China and India, mainly China.
So you could say Asia is the epicenter of coal.
Very much so. I think there's been some contraction in some parts of the world, but it's been very, very minor. Mostly, it's been a growth story globally. And I should mention that the major reason what's driving, I mean, India and China, we all know, are on a growth spurt, you might say, or if not a long-term trend. And what's going on in general is that the per capita consumption of electric power in China and India is very, very low by Western standards. Just to put the numbers on that, the Chinese per capita are consuming about 3,000 kilowatt hour per year, compared to the U.S. with about going on 13,000. Canada 15,000, Australia 12,000, and the European countries between 6 and 8, and then there's India. India's consumption per capita is under 1,000. It's about 650 kilowatt hours, so it's only a quarter of what it is in China. So there's a definitely a catch up game going on in these two areas, and I think that it's very unlikely that we'll see that trend change, given that the middle classes have, in fact, started to grow in both countries.
This isn't exactly reassuring, Ignacio, given that coal-fired plants historically and currently are leading causes of smog, acid rain, toxic air pollution, and global warming.
Well,
why can't we move to cleaner alternatives?
Well, first, let me just say one thing. You know, it's absolutely true that the coal that's just simply consumed, you know, burnt, combusted without anything else is, in fact, a terrible idea. In fact, in countries that have environmental rules that are enforced, like the U.S., coal-burning utilities are required to scrub the emissions, so that, in fact, the pollution part of the problem has been very, very, you know, broadly controlled. Clearly, CO2 remains an issue. That's a different thing. I mean, you know, people, when they talk about clean coal, a lot of people immediately go to the whole notion of carbon footprint and greenhouse gases. And so when they talk about clean coal, they talk about reducing those. Other people, and in fact, historically, what's been the concern is the pollution, as you put it, the sulfur, the mercury, and the rest. So the point is that in this country, generating companies that burn coal are, in fact, most of them are scrubbing the emissions, and so you have controlled a lot of that. Now, globally, that's not the case. In Asia, well, we all know that the Chinese are putting up with an enormous amount of air pollution, and yes, you're absolutely right, it's a huge concern there.
I had a guest a few weeks ago, Darcy Goodwin, who was just back from China, and she said the common word is, in Beijing, you don't have to smoke, you just have to open the window.
I would say that's probably a huge understatement. I think it's more like, you know, that you go outside and you have to take a bath after one block. It's very, very, very dangerous air quality in China. So yes, I think what's let's say where we've come into this picture is that as the consumption of coal has gone up so dramatically worldwide, you know, it's clearly brought to the fore what are the technology priorities for the industry at large. You know, one of them clearly is, you know, you've got to clean the emissions. And secondly, you know, as the coal consumption has risen dramatically, into the mix of the coal that's being consumed, that's being traded, has entered what we call low-rank coals. And the low-rank coals, we're defining those as coals that have a very high moisture content. So these are the two technology priorities right now in the industry, are to solve those two issues.
What's the problem with the low-rank coal and the high moisture content?
The problem with high moisture coal is there are two at least problems. One, you know, to start with, is very, very clearly a very inefficient fuel source. We've always used the analogy of burning a wet log in a stove or a fireplace. It's very, very inefficient. You use a lot of energy just getting rid of the moisture, but you end up consuming a lot more than you need. And if you're not scrubbing the emissions, then clearly you're going to be emitting more than you would otherwise.
So more pollutants, more CO2.
More pollutants, more CO2, more consumption of the resource, and that's problem one. Problem two is that if you have, but when we talk about low rank coals, we're talking about really low rank coals coming into the mix, coals that have 30%, 40%, or even 50% moisture content, which means that from a transportation economic standpoint, those coals are highly inefficient. I mean, people are paying to transport water, essentially. So that's not a good
and
situation.
Burning a lot of a lot of high carbon fuel to get them from point A to point B.
That's correct too. Absolutely. So that's the problem. The dry coal, the requirement for dry coal is a very pressing problem. Countries like India are. Their industry is a very peculiar structure. They have a lot of coal domestically, but it's very high ash, and that's number one problem. But the other problem, which is probably even bigger, they have not really managed to organize their coal industry to be able to supply the domestic market. They don't have the infrastructure. Well, not just the infrastructure, but they don't have the right institutional structure to develop the coal.
So before we go to kind of how to solve individual problems, why can't we just replace the coal with wind power, solar power, with greener energy technologies rather than greenhouse gas sources?
It's a question of energy efficiency. The highest, by efficiency we mean, you know, of the amount of energy that's contained in a fuel source. It could be oil or natural gas or coal. How much of that is actually captured for, you know, effective power generation, for example. Now, the highest, like the state-of-the-art efficiency level for coal today is about 45%. It's about the same for a little bit more, in fact, for oil, but similar, and for natural gas. It's even a little lower there. For the renewables, it's horrible. You're talking about 15%, 12%, maybe 17%. Very, very low. So in other words, it's only about a third as efficient as coal or the fossil fuels, and therefore it's extremely costly to develop the industry. The economics just don't work right now.
Interesting. So, Robin, why not natural gas instead of coal? China has a lot of natural gas. I don't know about India, but there's certainly an upsurge in the use of natural gas, which is presumably a cleaner energy source and emits relatively less CO2. We had a Texas oil man on the show who at least was absolutely a strong natural gas booster.
Well, you're joking, but I think, and there's two issues here. One, what we're saying about coal is we're looking for these sort of energy bridge to the future, and we believe that coal is that fuel source. By the bridge, eventually, yes, natural gas will probably become one of the, if not the major fuel source. But we're probably 10 to 15 years away, realistically. There's two or three problems on natural gas. One is that certainly in the United States, there's not the infrastructure in place to transport it to all the different places it has to be transferred to, all the user consumer markets. The infrastructure is still not in place in any major format to export natural gas. And therefore, you have very, very big differences in the prices of natural gas. Here in the United States, natural gas, yes, it's very cheap. But in Europe and in Asia, it's not cheap at all. It's actually quite expensive as a fuel source at the moment. And again, in many of the major countries, as you again mentioned China, it's a question of getting the infrastructure in place. And probably to get the global infrastructure to make natural gas a viable and efficient and economic fuel source, and probably the leading fuel source, probably is 10, 15 years away from now.
And what we're
saying is, between now and then, what is the logical bridge? It's not solar. It's not wind. Coal is the fuel source. It's everywhere. It's transportable. It's efficient. It's cheap. And at the moment, yes, it's polluting, and that is why companies such as ours come into the mix here to try to solve that problem of cleaning coal up and drying it.
And on that note, we've got to go to break. We're stuck with coal. When we come back, we're going to find out what to do about it.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the second segment of Global Reach, everyone. I am here with my guests, Robin Heath and Ignacio Castiglione, both from Clean Coal Technologies, and we're trying to figure it out. Can you have cleaner coal? Some people say that clean coal is a myth. My guests say it's a reality. So let's go right into it. We have coal. It's highly polluting. They're going into lower quality coal, so it's got high moisture. It's hard to transport. It's expensive. Big carbon footprint. You have some solutions. Robin, what are the solutions?
Well, CCTI has two patented technologies, globally patented technologies, one for drying coal and one for cleaning coal. This space traditionally is littered with failed technologies and lost investments. So there's a high degree of skepticism globally about the ability for any company to find the solution to clean or dry coal. We believe we have put together probably the most professional and experienced team ever put together to address this problem. We have SAIC as our EPC contractor, and who has also done the engineering design work behind our patents. We have two probably of the most respected coal scientists and engineers and coal professionals in the United States on our staff who are working, interfacing with SAIC in order to help with the coal part of the equation, i.e. the coal handling and how the coal will go in to the particular technologies and will then produce a stable product at the end. We have also gone one step further because the technologies that have failed basically have failed for three reasons. One, they don't scale up from the pilot plant. Two, they do not produce a stable product at the end. And three, they become economically non-viable because the costs expand dramatically. We have the benefit and the experience to address all those problems. Our technologies, I think, very basically, we don't crush the coal. We retain the identity of coal, so we don't have to brick it at the end of the process, which most of the other technologies have done, and it's proven not to transport well. It reabsorbs water when you briquette. Secondly, scalability. Most of these other technologies have gone from a small pilot plant, which has worked successfully, and gone straight to the commercial design plant of maybe a million tons or more, and they haven't scaled up. And the most recent failure was White Energy in Indonesia last year, which we regard as our main competitor. And the third is that because of the inability to scale up properly, the costs have ballooned and they become uneconomical for the both the miner, the investor, and the designers of the plants.
What's the hitch? Why don't they scale up properly?
Because when you go from maybe a 2 or 3 ton per hour to a million ton plant, you get an awful lot of different problems arising. But one of the main problems, and we have very very recently come up with this, is that all these technologies, and indeed we have in the past, have taken coal from different parts of the world and tested it on our technology and have come back with very, very good results. And based on those results, most of the other companies have built built a commercial size unit or tried to build a commercial size unit. Now, what has happened is that the coal mines around the world have, most of them have 5, 6, 7 different seams. Each of these seams have, in many cases, dramatically different specifications of coal. And unless you get a sample of coal that is truly representative of any mine, then you're going to run into major problems when you start to build a plant based on one sample that's not representative. So what we have done in the last, 3 to 4 months, I guess, or even less, Our team has, one of the coal experts said to us clearly, this is why these have failed, and this is what you and your technology must address. So, in combination with our test plant that we're building right now, we're building another small 6-foot by 2-foot unit, which will basically batch test the different specifications from the different seams in any one mine. And that will then give us the components of the liquids that are derived from the coal, and from that we'll be able to work out how to produce a very stable dry product. Anyone can dry coal. That is, there's no mystery to drying coal. But when you try dry coal, you've changed the characteristics of that coal, and it becomes unstable, and you've got to be able to stabilize it. So the key is stabilization of the coal. We believe we have found the solution to stabilizing the coal.
So what do you do with the water? Doesn't the water that you draw out of the coal, isn't that full of toxic components?
No. Do you want to address that one, Ignacio? But
no, Peggy. I think in principle, what the water that comes off the coal is going to be in the form of steam. You might even think of it as practically distilled. What in practice will happen is that you'll have some particulate matter going into the steam that might, in fact, contaminate the water. But there are technologies, simple technologies, to remove the particulate matter just to filter it out, and you would end up with a fairly clean water. I mean, certainly something that would be able to be used for irrigation or that sort of thing.
Interesting, because one of the big fears, at least on the fracking side, or of course, then you're putting chemicals in to the water to get your gas out. But a huge concern about contaminating agricultural water, contaminating drinking water, contaminating the aquifer, and, of course, because of runoff.
Yeah, that's not the same problem here. I mean, we literally are taking water out of the coal. It's just H2O. It comes out as a steam. It comes out, in principle, it comes out as such, as H2O, and therefore should be fairly clean. You know, all we're saying is that, if you do have some particulates going into it, you wouldn't want to drink it, but you can treat it very, very simply, and I think have a pretty decent, effluent for whatever purpose you want.
In different parts of the world, it has obviously a different value, but in some of the remoter parts of China and India, this water has significant value that comes off.
It could be valued, yeah.
Well, we're certainly going into an era where they say water is the petroleum of the 21st century, so I imagine all water that is usable is going to have a significant value going forward.
Correct.
So that's the water part, and I think it's interesting because are you saying if you dry it improperly, it crumbles, and if it crumbles, is it combustible? I mean, is it going to,
any coal that's why briquetting it when you transport briquettes, you get a lot of crumbling, a lot of fines, and that in the end can self combust. Absolutely.
I was going to say because coal dust mine explosion seems to resonate in my memory.
Yeah,
that's correct.
Exactly.
Right, now talk about the other. What about all of these noxious substances that are in the coal, the nitrous oxides, the mercury, all this other stuff that when you burn, and you said they're scrubbing in the U.S., but not necessarily in the plants that have been built overseas.
That's right.
What's your technology to address that problem?
Well, the technology that we have, let's say that what our patent, the breakthrough that we have is that we found a way to take the volatiles out of the coal. The volatiles means reducing the coal as much as possible to pure carbon and hydrogen. And to do that, it requires obviously heat. Now, most testing that was done on coal and the other people who have tried to remove volatiles have encountered the problem that when you subject coal to high heat, the carbon tends to turn into a dust, and it renders the product commercially not so usable. Our process has managed to allow us to remove the volatiles applying heat and to retain the structural integrity of the coal. So that's what we have. Now the volatiles that are coming out of the coal, like I said, we're going to take everything that's in there out, with the exception of the carbon. The carbon is that's really what the essential coal is. That is something that would burn pretty much as you know, assuming that you have enough volatile content, mostly hydrogen. It will burn stably in a boiler. You don't have to. It'll probably burn as clean as natural gas once it's all devolatized. And this has not been seen yet. No one has done that yet. There's no one currently burning a completely devolatized coal. And let me just mention that there is a coal that is naturally very low volatility, very low volatile coal. That's anthracite coal.
Okay.
Which is otherwise known as, I mean, people refer to it generally as metallurgical coal. It's prized because it is low vols, and therefore when you use it for making steel, you don't have to deal with all of the contaminants and things that you don't want to enter the steel process. So anthracite coals are very, very valuable, and therefore, I mean, they're $180, $200 a ton in this country versus $40 to $60 for the thermal coals.
Okay.
So nobody in their right mind would use anthracite coal to burn it in an industrial boiler. It just wouldn't make any economic sense. So what our process does is that we remove the volatiles. We can remove them entirely or less than entirely and have a far cleaner coal than otherwise.
Yeah, but what do you do with all that waste? Does it release into the atmosphere, into the soil, into the water?
No, it's basically in the processor, which is by the way a closed loop system. All of the coal gases are recondensed. They're condensed into liquids that are then carried off, and the idea is that these hydrocarbon liquids would be blended in with crude oil at refiners, who then have the ability to separate out the different components. That's what they do.
What do you do with the components? Do you use them in other industrial processes?
They would mix them with crude oil in a normal refining operation. In fact, if depending on the coal type that we're talking about, assuming that it had a higher ratio of lighter versus heavy volatiles, you might actually sweeten the crude oil that's being refined, depending on which it is. So it could be quite valuable as a byproduct.
I think to put that into context, if the light hydrocarbons, it would be used as a feedstock. And from our initial investigations and inquiries with the refineries, they could probably take about 7% of this of these hydrocarbons as a feedstock into the refinery at any one time.
When you say sweeten, just so our audience knows, sweeten the feedstock, what do you mean exactly?
It means low sulfur.
Okay. So this would actually lower the sulfur emissions of petroleum.
If the coal has low sulfur in it, then what we're saying, and by the way, a lot of coal is low sulfur. I mean,
okay.
the Indonesian coals are low sulfur, the PRB coals are fairly low sulfur. So what happens with those is that When you add the what we call them coal derived liquids or CDLs, when you use those to supplement what crude oil is going into a refining process, you might actually be improving that raw material, and it will be refined in the normal fashion with a lot of the things that aren't desirable being taken out.
What do you do with the mercury and other toxins that are also in the coal?
Well, we don't do anything. I mean, that's not. We simply create the hydrocarbon liquids, and then those are turned over to a refiner who would then separate out and deal with the various components as they will.
Okay.
I mean, mercury in this country, the mercury is not going to be thrown into the rivers or anything else. You know, so whatever they do with mercury.
Okay. Where does this all happen? What part of the energy chain or value chain do you do the drying, and then where do you clean it up? Do you do it near the mine? Do you do it in the country that you're transporting it to, near the factories?
Okay, let's address that. I mean, there's two different technologies here, or three, but the two which we're addressing right now. One is the Pristine, and one is the Pristine M. The Pristine M is essentially a drying technology. And so, you know, if for instance, in Indonesia, they have a tremendous amount of a very, very moist coal, in some cases 56%.
Wow.
At the moment, they're transporting that 56% water. So straight away, it's clear you put the drying plant at the mine head. And so you take that moisture out, so immediately your transportation economics are improving incredibly. Now, for the purpose of what we're doing in Indonesia right now, we're essentially just providing the technology to dry the coal. That is what they want. And by drying the coal, you increase the efficiency of the coal, and the kcals will go up from anywhere from 4,000 to 7,500, Ignacio, I think.
Yeah.
Something in that range. So you're getting far more efficient coal, you're not transporting the water, and you're getting a much higher price for your coal. So that essentially is what we're doing in Indonesia. If one comes to something like into the United States or into China, then the Pristine technology comes into play a lot more. And there you might have difference of opinions. Power plants might want to put the technology at the power plant. The transaction that we were involved with, or our company was involved with in China, was purely and simply the Pristine technology, and that was being put. I think that was really being put in an industrial park, and they were bringing the coal in from outside to that industrial park, and then utilizing it for the power plants from there.
Okay. We need to go to break now. When we get back, what I really want to tackle is how you take a relatively new technology and really develop your niche in the entire world energy chain to actually take your place. So don't go away, because this is interesting for more than just an energy company and a clean coal company. We all want to know how we break in with our new technologies into an established value chain.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Global Reach, everyone. This is our final segment, and I am here with the two leaders of Clean Coal Technology, Rob Anise and Ignacio Ponce de Leon. We are talking about the myth versus the reality of clean coal. Coal is here to stay. But also, how a company with a new technology takes its place in an established industry. How do you carve out your own niche? During the break, Ignacio, you said there was one other factor in coal that we hadn't talked about that really needs to be considered.
Yes. Let me just mention, if you just go back to World War II, the Germans developed a process known as Fischer-Tropp. Germany is a country that has a lot of coal and very, very, very little liquid fuel. During the war, they developed a technology to turn coal into liquids, into liquid fuels. They made diesel fuel or aircraft fuel or what have you. Now, that Fischer-Tropp process was, you know, obviously very successful for their needs at that time, but not very economical. And after the war, it was basically shelved. And following that, it actually ended up in South Africa, where during apartheid, and South Africa is in the same situation, they have a lot of coal and very little liquid fuel, they use Fischer-Tropp to supply their liquid needs. I would say that today China is exactly in the position of Germany. They do not have very much in the way of liquid fuels. They have a huge abundance of coal. Now, what the process that we have does is that by devolatizing the coal, what it ends up happening is that when you go to a coal-to-liquids process, there's one part of that process which is called the hot gas treatment. When you take a coal and introduce it into a gasifier, and that coal has a lot of volatile matter in it, to make the syngas, you have to remove everything except the carbon from the coal in order for it to have a pure syngas that then will be liquefied.
So are we going to have coal-powered cars now in China?
Well, already, by the way, the Chinese now have the Fischer-Tropp process, and they have apparently improved it. The economics of this have improved greatly with $100 oil plus. So the time has come. And I think the major synergy here is that hot gas treatment is a very, very complex part of the process. When you introduce a coal that's already cleaned up of all of those things and you eliminate the hot gas treatment part of it, you end up saving maybe 20% of the cost of gasification and then subsequent liquefaction. In this country, there are already six plants that are creating gas from coal, and they are producing it. It's already meeting the environmental standards without any further, controls.
Really interesting. So let's go back to where we were at the end of the last segment. How do you take your new technology and carve out your own niche among everything else where you've got established infrastructure and established 900-pound gorillas?
Okay, that's an interesting question. But there is a massive need for this technology globally. The global market for it is billions of tons of coal. The immediate addressable market, where you have to dry the coal, you have to keep, is in hundreds of millions of tons. The market penetration for this is at the moment less than 1%. So it's a multi-billion-dollar opportunity. So you're going to have a lot of companies looking for solutions. As I said before, the market is littered with failures, littered with lost investments. I think a very, very clear example of what I'm saying is just over this last weekend, China proposed a ban on low-value coal from imports from Indonesia. So they were basically saying that if the coal has kcal of less than 4,500, you can no longer import it into China.
Is that 4,500 BTUs?
Yes. And they were considering putting this into effect literally within the next few weeks, which would force the Indonesians to dry the coal and increase the BTU value. So when Ignacio and I discovered this company and the technology, obviously we looked at the technology, looked at the credibility of the SAIC behind it, and then looked at the global market and where companies have failed. It was clear that it was going to be a very, very tough fight to get anything off the ground in the United States. The skepticism from PRB and other places was extreme. And really the immediate need in the United States was not as great as it is in Asia, where you have massive reserves of coal and especially, particularly in Indonesia, very, very low-ranked coal, mass amount. You've got in Sumatra, you've got billions of tons of reserves. Less than 5% are being mined at the moment because it is just without value as it is. And as we speak, there's a major consortium of companies going down to Korea, from Korea, going down to Indonesia and saying, look, we will buy these reserves if you have a credible coal technology to go with it.
Sounds like the Indonesian coal is about as valuable as Irish peat.
Well, that is it. Now, so when we were looking for strategic investors, we did have a very, very strong flirtation with a U.S. One of the largest U.S. coal companies in the United States. They tried to buy our company at one point, which we resisted. But after that, we got interest from mainly from India and China, India and Indonesia, and the Indonesians have put in nearly $15 million of investments to our company in the last year. And so when you say where do we fit in the sort of value chain, we create with our technology create a tremendous arbitrage in prices. We will take that low rank coal, which is, you know, has very, very, very low value, if any, and create a product at the mine which has very, very significant value, and the economics of our technology are very, very compelling. The other part of our technology, which the audience should really realize, is that whereas all the other technologies that have been brought to market have failed on scalability problem, we have solved that because our technology is modular. So you go from a 2-ton per hour test unit to a 30-ton per hour commercial module. And after that, you just stack the modules up. So it's very, very efficient for maintenance. It's very efficient for if one module has a breakdown, you do not have to shut the entire plant down. And the other thing is that companies can grow slowly. They don't have to go immediately and put the investment in for a million-ton plant. They can take 2 or 3 modules, and they can commercialize that, and they start building, and they see the efficiency of it, and they can add to it, which has caused a lot of excitement in the market.
Robin, how did you decide to go the modular route?
I think that both Ignacio and I can't take credit for that. I think it was a design which was brought to us. When SAIC were designing the designer engineering around our patents, they came up with the modular. I think that's correct, is not Ignacio?
Yeah, I think what really happened was that they were asked not to invent anything complex. They wanted to avoid as much complexity as possible and therefore rely as much as possible on existing off-the-shelf type of equipment. And as they reviewed what things were available, they ended up with a particular size, which happens to be a very manageable module size.
That's a theme, isn't it, today in production? Simplicity.
Yeah, well, it should be.
As much as possible, particularly if you're going into some of the tougher operating countries around the world.
I think that's very, very true. And what has, again, caused a lot of excitement from the coal owners, especially in Asia, is the simplicity of our technology, the Pristine M technology. We've had a lot of very sophisticated engineers and scientists look at it, and we believe we're probably the market leader out there. And I would say in the last 6 months, we've got unsolicited interest inquiries from probably 9 different countries.
How do you think you're getting in front of them?
I think by the process of elimination. As I said, that there's tremendous demand and need for drying and cleaning coal in Indonesia, in Australia, in South Africa, in Serbia, in Europe, in Russia, in China, in India. And there's hundreds of millions of dollars spent on research and building of coal technology, and in most cases it has failed spectacularly.
Let me ask you something. It's rough for any company, first of all, to distinguish itself in a crowded market. But second, it's rough for a small domestic company to go international and to go into really rough markets like Indonesia, China, and India as their first conquest. How did you get in front of them, and how did you find the right partners over there?
But I think firstly, we presented as a conference in a coal conference in New Delhi in India. We presented a coal conference in Indonesia, or two actually, one in Jakarta and one in Bali. And from those conferences, we were able to attract the attention of some of the major corporations, Jindal Power and Steel in India, a multi-billion-dollar steel and power corporation. Have already signed a technology license agreement to commercialize our technology. Directly, the test facility is up and running in the next 3 months or so. And same was in Indonesia. Because of the presentations, we then met with people that went to the conferences, and we'd had a lot of experience. I personally had done a lot of business in the oil business down in Indonesia during the Suharto regime. So we understand the way to do business, the way business is conducted, and the real needs of many of these countries. And whereas I think a lot of other technology companies have not that sort of global experience from a management point of view. So we brought, as Ignacio as well, has had a lot of experience in these countries. So we brought a lot of experience and knowledge of these countries, and as I say, and also knowledge of the coal market and the energy markets. And where a technology company such as ours would fit in, and what those companies needed from us in order to bring some credibility into a, as they say, into a market filled with skepticism. And we brought the credibility because, A, the management that was, I think we've got a very credible management team, but also with SCIC as our design engineer and EPC partners, and the credibility of the coal experts we brought on board to help Ignacio and I really understand more in depth the coal technology.
Hmm. Listen, Robin and Ignacio, you've both mentioned SAIC a number of times. Just in about 1 minute, who are they and how did you pair up with them?
Ignacio?
Yeah, okay. SAIC, I mean, arguably, it's the 800-pound gorilla of U.S. science and engineering. SAIC, which stands for Science Applications International Corporation, is a company that's distinguished from the Halliburtons and the Bechtels in that they're not primarily involved in the actual construction of projects. They're not the ones who are laying the steel and building the refineries. They are what's known essentially as a body shop, i.e. a think tank. They employ 52,000 scientists and engineers worldwide, 30,000 of them PhDs. Half of them have security clearances, and they are a company that has distinguished itself mainly as one of the major contractors to the U.S. government in the area of defense and national security intelligence. They're
exactly.
Very proficient.
2 minutes. Sorry to interrupt. We got 2 minutes to close. So very quickly, how did you get the link with them? And then I want to ask you how you're protecting your intellectual property, which is clearly the crown jewels of your company.
Okay. SAIC was at one time the research arm of the DOE. The Department of Energy. And in that capacity, they were really, they saw a lot of the technologies that were incubating. They know a lot about this space. At one time, the prior management of this company approached the DOE for support. They were told, your process is ready for patent, or they got it patented, as they go get it commercialized, and they sent them to SAIC. And that's where the relationship started over 10 years ago.
And the two of you followed up with it. Now, very quickly, you're going into countries which don't necessarily respect intellectual property. Let's say they respect it so much they like to adopt it unofficially. How are you protecting your intellectual property?
Okay, I'll do that very quickly. Well, we have one of the top patent attorneys, Nixon van der Heim in the United States, has been prosecuting our patents globally for us since the company went public in 2007. Part of the uniqueness of our technology is the software package. And the software is obviously built by SAIC, and every single unit we build, plant we build all over the world, will be able to be controlled in real time back to a facility in Detroit, in the United States. So essentially, it's put there for troubleshooting so that any time of day, night, in any country, if something goes wrong, we can troubleshoot it and correct it. But also, it has the uniqueness of telling us if anyone is trying to reverse engineer or do anything with that technology. So, it's one of the huge advantages of having a company like SAIC as your EPC engineer and design partner.
I can think of a number of companies that would like that kind of control.
Yeah.
Robin Ignacio, in 30 seconds or less, what are your next steps?
With next steps, we are actually going down where the company right now is in the final stages of completing our test facility, which we're going to put in one of the largest coal-fired utilities in the United States. We test that out. We're actually going down to visit our partners in Indonesia tomorrow, and when we come back, we'll go full scale to finish the test facility. We go immediately into commercialization of the technology with Jindal Power and Steel and for the coal companies in Indonesia. And then from there on, we intend to clean up the cap structure of the company and hopefully go on to NASDAQ in the early part of next year.
That is really exciting. So I can see that you are going to be using your next few weeks and months to extend your global reach. We're out of time on this show. So, Ignacio, Robin, I want to thank you both for appearing on Global Reach.
Thank you very much.
And to the audience, please keep those emails coming. Tell me what you want to know and who you want me to talk to. And please use the next week to extend your global reach.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.